This is the War Room with PMAC, presented by Chiefs Focus. On this show, PMAC and you provide you front office insight into crafting a championship caliber team for the Chiefs. They are identifying the right pieces to possibly meld together to lead to success this upcoming season.
Welcome into the War Room with PMAC, where we are crafting together a team that can go for the three-peat. And we're doing it methodically, and we're trying to figure out the best pieces to put together to build that three-time championship team. I'm here with Philip, a.k.a. PMAC. I am you. What it do?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you guys for hopping on here today, and welcome back to another episode of The War Room with PMAC, presented by Chiefs Focus. I'm your host, Philip PMAC Magruder. I'm glad to be joined here by my co-host and my producer, the man himself, the myth, the legend, Diz, a.k.a. you. And the NFL Draft 2024 is almost here. In just a week's time, we'll find out which teams our favorite prospects will be joining. As we assess each team's draft strategy, particularly that of the Chiefs, we'll be excited to see how their offensive and defensive schemes come together. With hundreds of prospects to consider, we'll be analyzing each one to help our fans understand the strengths and weaknesses of each player and how they might fit into their new team. While the draft process can be both exciting and frustrating, anticipation will finally come to an end next Thursday. So we have a show for you today. So me and Thiz are going to jump right into it with our first segment. And it's a discussion about the Chiefs and a big time rumor that we've been hearing out there in the Twitter world or in the NFL world, whatever you want to call it. And welcome to our new segment, That's News to Me. And one of the first things we want to talk about here on this show today, man.
First things first,
right. If you're a diehard red and gold and white Chiefs fan, these are great times today. Wake up with a smile on your face. You know,
absolutely.
Just happy to clean off the dinner table, take the garbage out without being asked or being told to, and knowing that you are the defending back-to-back Super Bowl champions with the best coach and the best player in the world. If you're an NFL fan living outside of Chiefs Kingdom, you might feel a sense of discomfort. You may harbor negative feelings towards the Chiefs and their key players and coach Andy Reid, such as Mahomes and even Travis Kelce, and the idea of Kelce dating Taylor Swift and facing the potential backlash of her fans, the Swifties, might be particularly annoying to you. This could be true for fans from cities like, I'm going to have to say it, Cincinnati, Buffalo, San Francisco, Baltimore, or even New England, who held the title those last 20 years. And recently, two trades have happened in the span of this entire month where both teams told their players they could choose any team, even teams within the AFC, but the Chiefs. So that leads us into our topic, anybody but the Chiefs, because one started with wide receiver Deontay Johnson, who was previously with the Steelers, before being traded to the Panthers before the first day of the new league year. And according to a report from Mike Garofalo from NFL Total Access, he had permission and his agent did. They went to go seek a trade. They had talked to a few teams. They even talked to the Chiefs. But it was the Steelers that said no to that. And they sent him to the NFC, to the Carolina Panthers. And then after that, there was another trade that had the Chiefs written all over it. And it was with an all-pro by the name of Stephon Diggs in Buffalo, where he was allowed to do the same thing Deontay Johnson was able to do. But the Bills said anybody but the Chiefs. You get that, Diz? Anybody but the Chiefs. So that kind of says to you that the Chiefs are now being referred to as the evil empire of the NFL, of football, with head coach Andy Reid taking the role of Darth Vader or Darth Sidious. The team has embraced this label, even selling the Super Bowl 57 that had the villain logo on it. And I think those t-shirts are still available, and they were made by Made Mob in the Chiefs Pro Shop right now, are still online. It's no secret that the Chiefs are seen as the team to beat, and many other teams are chasing after us. The NFL has never been seeing domination like this, and the Chiefs have done all of their damage so far since Mahomes has took over at quarterback in 2018. So I want to know what your thoughts so far about that, about anybody but the Chiefs, when we are the team that nobody wants to deal with and they fear us. So what's your thoughts?
You must understand, the Steelers have lost to us two times in the playoffs. When prior to that, we lost to them.
Mm-hmm.
When prior to that, there's been two times that we've lost to them in playoff, and that was playoff situations. Back when they're running
back, Alex Smith.
Back when Alex Smith, but their running back was
Le'Veon
Bell.
Back when he was with Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, the three Bs.
Yeah, so you know that there's history there, obviously, and then they're also in the AFC. I don't know what that's got to do with them because they haven't been close to top five in a long time. So if we're going to be real about it, yeah, they're going to the Chiefs, but y'all not even that close yet. For real. Y'all got to figure out who y'all quarterback is. So y'all not even close, but you know, I understand the concept of not wanting the Chiefs to get stronger because this is three-peat season. Like, anything short of that is a failure.
Yeah.
Period. So, I get it, but I like really. So that's the Steelers, and the other team was
Buffalo Bills, the team Buffalo. That was supposed to be our nemesis. After these last three seasons in the postseason, actually 2020 AFC Championship, the 13-second game 2021, we didn't meet them in 2022. The Bengals sent them home in the division, and then wide right just this past year. So their window is, to me, over, personally.
Joe Burrow begs to differ with you. He was on the New Heights podcast, I think this last week, and he said that the Bengals were – Built to beat
the Chiefs. I saw that at Kelsey and both Jason and Travis receiving their diplomas at University of Cincinnati. And I love Travis's response to that.
I'm going to just let you know. That means that they're getting a wide receiver, just so you know. That's what that means. There are a lot of good – we've talked about it. It's a lot of good left tackles in this position. I mean, not left tackles. There are a lot of good tackles in general in this draft. So if they can go, because they lose Tyler Boyd, they're not bringing him back. Like, he's not coming back any shape, form, or fashion. So if they go get, let's say, Adonai Mitchell, let's say they go get a left tackle where they're sitting at right now, and then they go get a Keon Coleman later on in the second round, late. Or early second round. They move up in the second round, 33, 34, 35, 34 through 40, and try to get a Keon Coleman if he's there. Just know that's going to happen. Yeah. Because with Tyler Boyd being gone, who was the healthiest of the two in Cincinnati as a wide receiver, Tyler Boyd and you know the dude's name.
T. Higgins.
Jamar. Yeah, with T. Higgins wasn't super healthy last year. Tyler Boyd was more healthy than he was. So you got to think about that.
Yeah. I was going to say this. Since Joe Burrow is saying that they're built to beat the Chiefs, I kind of can hear through the language that even they're going to try to beat us, they're going to try to emulate what we're trying to do. And it's like the Bills tried to do that last year when they drafted Dalton Kincaid, and our names was written all over almost getting Dalton Kincaid if he slipped to us. Now there's another name that the Bengals have there, as I heard in Rumorville, especially from our guy on the inside who we've talked to about this. He says that the Bengals are looking to try to look at Brock Bowers if he falls to them in between ranges, number 11 through 20. And that could be like their move, like what the Bills did with Kincaid as a way to try to get at the Chiefs. And Bowers, for example, could come in and replace that slot inside inline production that Boyd brought. And I could see that. And then you add him with Hudson, who really was a breakout star at tight end last year. That could happen, stuff like that. I think he's going to do something different because they don't want to do the same thing over. But
no. I'm not as worried about anybody getting any other tight end because aside from what's his face up in with the Lions, I don't really think a lot of teams know how to use. Yeah, Sam Laporta. I don't think a lot of teams know how to use a tight end in the way that they could be the best for the team. So, you know, you can take a page from the Chiefs playbook if you'd like. Mm-hmm. But do you have the talent at the coaching staff to pull it off? That's the question we have to ask.
And on top of that, just know, like, when you're going to send a certain wide receiver, or if you're the wide receiver, you're in this position to go to a certain team, you got to, like, take this consideration. Like, if I wanted to play with Pat Mahomes, you got to consider this. You give MV Pat the opportunities, like, those final seconds in the Super Bowl. Cue the Jordan music. Dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun. He is known to take advantage of that challenge. He did that. In my opinion, the Niners could have easily won both those Super Bowl games, 54 and 58, if they hadn't missed those opportunities. Now, Mahomes has his third Super Bowl in 7 seasons. I mean, he's joined Brady. He's Jordan. Troy Aikman now. I mean, he's the third player with 3 Super Bowls and 2 MVPs, Brady and Montana level. I mean, these are Hall of Fame famed legends, and this guy's not even 30 yet. And I'm gonna tell you
the Chiefs won the first game. The 49ers lost the second one.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to admit that, but the 49ers lost the second one. When you don't know the rules and the other team does and they exploit those rules, then you failed. So it wasn't. I do take my hat off to the Chiefs for, and they won by knowing the rules. Period. I mean, that's all to that. So, but I do think it was more of they kind of gave it to us by not knowing the rule change, more than it was us winning it. But I mean, the Chiefs did win it because they knew the rules and the other team didn't. Period.
Absolutely. They already know that. Mahomes, he's already achieved a remarkable legacy, just winning those 3 out of the 4 Super Bowls. He's been to 4 Super Bowls in the last 5 years, and this is a sign of a dynasty. And if he continues at this pace, he's going to definitely be remembered as one of the greatest players to ever play in the game in the NFL. And it's hard to see anybody stopping him from achieving further greatness. So
it is a dynasty. So, you know, we already won the 3 in, 5 years?
Yeah.
The 3 championships in 5 years. It's already a dynasty. The question is, can he do what nobody's ever done before, including Brady himself? And that is winning 3 in a row. Now, let's move on. Speaking of Thomas Edward Patrick Brady.
I was actually going to say like this is regarding the topic of villains. Speaking of villains.
Darth Vader wants to make a comeback.
Not just that, Tom Brady, who I call the NFL's Gaston. If you guys never seen, you guys seen Beauty and the Beast, y'all know the famous villain Gaston. He's supposed to be one of the most good-looking pause characters, but villains, dark-hearted person. Like, nobody says no to Gaston, or nobody says no to Tom Brady. Every time I see Brady, he always comes with the looks and everything, smiling your face like Gaston does in the movie, like we said to Bell. Bell, it's time for you to put those books down and start paying attention to more important things. Like me, if I start smiling her face and the women fall over him, that's Tom Brady. You need to go sit down. But anyway, Brady had previously announced that he was retiring from football for good after coming out of retirement once before. However, at the age of 46, he seems to be reconsidering his decision. During an appearance on Deep Cuts with Vic Blends, Brady hinted at a potential return to the NFL and even mentioned the Patriots and the Las Vegas Raiders. Yes, guys, the Las Vegas Raiders as possible teams he could join. And from Brady's words, he said this, "I'm not opposed to it. I don't know if they're going to let me if I became an owner of an NFL team. I don't know. I'm always going to be in good shape, always going to be able to throw the ball. So to come in for a little bit like MJ referencing Michael Jordan coming back, I don't know if they'd let me, but I wouldn't be opposed to it." So speculation around Brady's future plans have already begun. So I want to know what your thoughts on this before I say what I got to say.
Yeah, of course. For those that don't know, that Tom Brady wants to be part owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. He has been offered that from the owner, Mark Davis. So with that being said, he can be owner, but if he wants to play, he has to get a third of the ownership votes to play. I don't quote me on that, but he has to get the ownership's approval to play and be an owner as well. And let's be honest, let's be completely stone cold honest. Michael Jordan did the same thing.
Yeah.
He owned the Wizards and he came back and played as a Wizard player. And if that was your last chance to see that Michael Jordan play, he was a shell of his former self. But he's still Michael Jordan, the greatest, yeah, one of the greatest of all time. So it was always a ticket to buy. If you were going to have that opportunity, you take that opportunity. This would be the same situation here. The Patriots, I highly doubt that they would bring him back and do anything with him because there's a completely new regime. Gerard Mayo is the coach up there. Seems like they're doing things different. They do need a quarterback. The Raiders do need a quarterback as well. But I don't know.
It's not a coincidence that these are two teams that are considered to pick high in this upcoming draft that he wants to come back to. And, yeah, you play with Gerard Mayo. Yeah, that might be the opportunity. Plus, you have a good relationship with Bob Kraft. But then why would I – even though I'm a minority owner of this team, the Raiders, why would I want to play for the guy that kept me – from having the greatest team in NFL history, going undefeated, Antonio Pierce, who was that linebacker.
I knew you would say something like that. But I don't think – look. When you look at it from the aspect that me and you talked about in private, and it's not a private conversation, folks, but me and you talked – myself and you talked about it, that he feels the pressure. He feels it. Mahomes is already at 3.
Legacy threatened?
Yeah, in 6 years. Tom Brady kind of went on the same trajectory with his career. The issue happened to be he wasn't an MVP until the 10s, the 2010. Yeah, he wasn't Tom Brady until after the third Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But here we are talking about Patrick Mahomes, who is now the guy. Tom Brady's the guy, but he ain't never been number one.
No.
If I'm not mistaken, I don't think he has been number one because he's a multiple time MVP. So let me say it like that. He has been number one.
Yeah.
But Patrick Mahomes is QB1 in the league, and he's been that for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
3 years. So with that being said, I think that legacy's feeling threatened a little bit.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you there. And it's a thing, though, that people need to understand. You know, it is important to understand that Patriots and Raider Nation should not get their hopes up because Brady is set to become a minority owner of the Raiders, and the league rules would prevent him from playing while holding an ownership stake in an NFL team. While it may be amusing to think about, it is highly unlikely that Brady will stage another comeback, especially that he will turn 47 in August this year. Instead, expect the seven-time Super Bowl champion will focus on his new role as Fox lead color commentator for this upcoming season or the next season, whichever one he'll join, whenever he'll join.
Before we move on, let me throw this at you.
All right.
If he comes back and he is not part owner yet, okay, let's get that clear. There's so many votes that the ownership has to throw out there just in, you know, if he wants to be owner player. He would be the first in the NFL to do that. So, of course, Tom Brady wants to be the first and only. He's the first player to win in his home, on his home turf, the Super Bowl, which I don't like to mention for obvious reasons. But if he could figure out a way to glad hand these owners, because there's a vote that has to go on if he wants to be a player owner, right? And if he can find a way to finesse that, he's going to try. That's number one. Number two, Mark Davis, if Tom Brady played for the Raiders and upped their value a little bit and Mark Davis saved his minority ownership stake, do you like that would be something that I think would be willing, he would be willing to do. Like, say, I'd still let you buy in at the same price that I told you before, mm-hmm. even though now the value of this franchise has gone up. I don't know if that's even legal. I'm not a lawyer, and I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn last night. So, Holiday Inn Express. So I'm not sure if that's even legal. That seems like insider trading. But if it's possible, if there's possible scandal going on, it wasn't just Bill Belichick. Just saying.
I know. Every controversy where Brady goes, there's always going to be controversy. I mean, there's a situation out at the University of Michigan where there's a donor by the name of Uncle T. And I'm like, Uncle T? And I said, there is a man who has a first name T who is a famous University of Michigan alumnus, and he's considered one of the greatest of all time coming out of University of Michigan. And I'm like, no wonder why Harbaugh got out of there so quickly. I'm like,
of course.
Man, it's like, anybody, I'm going to just say this. You are going to be warned. If you get Brady, just be careful. You don't want no allegations coming your guys' way. So, all publicity is good publicity, but not the publicity of controversy where it messes with your morals as a team. That's just where I'm going.
Some people sell their souls for the Super Bowl ring. So,
oh, my gosh. It's ridiculous.
We keep it moving as we move on to our next segment. What you got, bro?
So part of going into our next segment, because it goes in line with this new segment, for Chiefs fans out there, Chiefs are getting two top 30 visitors. One of them I'm going to mention in the next segment, but we're going to start with one of them that we mentioned on last week's episode. Tavondre Sweat, the 363-pound versatile D lineman from the University of Texas and the 2023 First Team All-American, is visiting the Chiefs this week. And this is the guy I've talked about who can lighten the workload for Derek Nnadi, Wharton, and Pinnell, and play as a one technique nose guy. And despite some recent trouble that he got into that could impact his draft stock, he has the potential to anchor the team next to Chris Jones if the Chiefs go that direction. So I'm happy about Sweat visiting.
I am too. I don't think there'll be much. Aside from the normal gamesmanship that it comes with drafting, I don't think there'll be much huge gamesmanship, because I think it's more. I think this could be one of those straightforward drafts for the Chiefs. I don't see a huge move happening like that. And the first one I'm thinking of, and the only one that the Chiefs ever really had, was moving or not allowing people to know that they were interested in Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. And I always have to go back to that, because we're talking about the guy that changed the franchise. So, they sent a scout down there to check him out, and they told Andy Reid has been notorious for telling them to get out of there for anybody to see you, because we don't want nobody to see you. They kept it hush hush as much as they could. So I don't think anybody will be. I don't think it'll be that top secret, but it's still top secret. So,
And now so, I want to, go ahead.
Go ahead, bro.
All right. So, and then part of that was Sweat. Another teammate of Sweat's visited the Chiefs, and it goes in line with our segment two section. As we go into segment two, just know this, in NFL drafts, valuable players can be found in the later rounds and among undrafted rookies, complimentary players, just like Sweat, he could be like a complimentary player coming in and make clutch contributions, which are often key to a team's success, whether you're on offense and defense. So specifically, this segment is on the running back position. A standout running back can take pressure off the quarterback and give the offense a balanced approach. A tough, reliable running game allows an offense to command a game's pace in the majority of contests. It also controls the game's result. While drafting a running back may have received some criticism, they could be a weapon in both the passing and run game, which is worth considering. Isaiah Pacheco has shown that he's a versatile player with the ability to make a difference in both the running and passing game. As he showed you, he was the guy to be counted on going into the Super Bowl this past year. The Chiefs should consider employing a possible running back at a value rate of a draft pick cost to maximize their Super Bowl window with Mahomes. And speaking of Sweat's teammate, one of the top three running backs in this draft class, Jonathan Brooks from Texas, visited the Chiefs on Monday. And Brooks is considered the best zone back in this class and has the potential to become a starting running back in the NFL if he could stay healthy. Although running back is not a major need, I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs attempt to add depth to the position during the draft if the right opportunity presents itself. This would help establish another dynamic duo with Pacheco, whoever their running back is, provide support to a position that has a high injury rate. After months of analyzing these prospects, here are my top five running back rankings for the 2024 draft class that the Chiefs should consider. And we'll start with my guy, my number one in this class. If they're looking at Brooks, they should definitely be looking at Blake Corum, the star running back out of the University of Michigan. Although it's unlikely, I hope the Chiefs would consider him. I mean, just imagine Pacheco teaming up, pairing with Blake Corum, who should remind fans of Doug Martin, a.k.a. the Muscle Hamster, the former All-Pro from 2015 and the two-time Pro Bowler coming out of Boise State. You watch the tape, it takes 5-6 guys at a time to try to bring him down, and he wants to score every time he touches the ball. I mean, it's really awesome to watch. During the Wolverines championship run, Corum was that guy. He has good vision. He sees cutback lanes. He hits the hole quickly without hesitation. He's a physical runner with great balance. He doesn't hesitate and attacks the ball. He's also really good at pass protection. Overall, I believe he's a rock solid player and should be the number one running back in this class. If he ends up with the right team, maybe the Chiefs, and get opportunities like replacing Jerick McKinnon, he could be a legitimate rookie of the year candidate. I mean, Corum would benefit from the developmental structure and culture that the Chiefs can provide him. In turn, they could have a cowbell running back for at least his rookie contract.
I'm not against Blake Corum. I actually like Blake Corum a lot. My thing is, picking him so early seems like a lot. Like, I see in most mock drafts that a lot of people are taking running backs pretty early. Yeah. And I understand completely if you think that's where you need to go. But I don't know. We've been able to find running backs at the latter part of the draft for years now. And we were able to even get – I'm losing names here. About two running backs ago.
Earl Williams.
So 3-4 running backs ago. Charkendrick West and
Spencer Ware.
Spencer Ware. Those guys. You know, you dealing with, like, I understand what dynamic running does for you. I know based on what happened in Tennessee and they got to the AFC Championship game, based on Derrick Henry being a running back and being a great one at the time. He basically carried what's-his-face through his whole Tennessee Titans career, the quarterback.
Ryan Tannehill.
So I understand. But if bringing in a Blake Corum has Andy Reid being more balanced, I'm all for it.
Me too.
I'm all for it, but I believe you can do the same thing with a later round pick and a 5 or 6, possibly even a 7th, even more so, maybe even in a UDFA, undrafted free agent rookie. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I like Blake Corum a lot, though. That's the if I'm going to take one at the top. If I'm going to take one in mid rounds in the top 100, I'd pick Blake Corum.
Absolutely. So moving on to our next one, and if we don't want to go with Blake Corum, here's another one, and this guy fits our scheme and everything that the Chiefs do, and that's none other than Dylan Johnson from the Washington Huskies. The Huskies have been in the spotlight ahead of the 2024 NFL draft thanks to their explosive offense, players like Rome Odunze, Michael Penix Jr., Jalen Polk, Jalen McMillan, who was another top 30 visitor for the Chiefs, and Troy Fatanu have all received plenty of recognition during the pre-draft process. However, Dylan Johnson was an essential part of that offensive unit, helping to elevate the ground game to impressive heights en route to a national championship appearance. Johnson is a strong runner with good burst, good play speed, similar to Ramondre Stevenson from the Patriots. He has excellent contact balance and can break tackles. Johnson would be a great fit in the Chiefs' run game. He's a big back who excels in pass protection and can handle a heavy workload. While he hasn't been a big part of the passing game, he has demonstrated a natural ability to catch the ball and quickly gain yards after the catch. In my opinion, Johnson's an upgraded version of Darrell Williams. So he's like Darrell Williams if he was drafted, but better.
I am not as big of a fan with Dylan Johnson. I'm not hating on him, though. I don't think I think he has some skills that could actually be very helpful to this team. And he can catch the ball. That's one of the things that I do need out of a wide receiver. I'm out of a running back.
Right.
So having him is not going to be a downgrade. I think he would be very helpful in this offense. I'm a big fan of Blake Corum, and I do think Dylan Johnson will be probably a little bit later in the round.
Yeah.
Or later in the draft, maybe a 4 or 5, round 4 or 5, something like that. But yeah, I would take him at that spot.
Yeah.
So we can move on to our next one.
Yes, sir. And my third running back, and this guy I've been looking at early on, especially since December, and it's Ray Davis from Kentucky. Davis has experienced and overcome great adversity in his life. He was one of 15 siblings at the age of 12. He found himself living in a homeless shelter despite these challenges. He persevered and became a well-known running back, gaining a total of 1,000 yards at 3 different schools, Temple, Vanderbilt, and lastly, coming out of the University of Kentucky. His hard work and dedication have paid off, and he is now on the verge of having his NFL draft dreams come true. He lacks long speed compared to the other running backs in this draft class, but he has excellent contact balance and great vision, which make him a perfect fit in his own scheme. Davis can gain hard-fought yards in the second and third levels of opposing defenses. What sets him apart from the rest of this draft class to me is his ability to be used in the passing game as a reliable receiver out of the backfield. I mean, if you look at his passer rating when targeted among all the running backs in this draft class, he has the best one, even over Bucky Irvin, who's among the best pass catching backs as well. And Davis has good hands to catch the ball out of the backfield. Adding Davis to the Chiefs would be a great move. He has a unique skill set that would enhance their passing attack and make him the most dynamic receiver out of the backfield.
With that being said, I like him. I like him a lot. There's some things he's missing. I don't know about the catching out of the backfield. I'm not 100% sure about it. However, with the current situation that we're in with our receiver, you know, having Ray Davis, I'm almost willing to bet guaranteed that he won't be getting in that kind of trouble. And so with that fresh on my mind, I'm kind of looking at that, not saying anything will happen to Rushy, nothing like that, but trying to keep a clean slate with your players is a pretty good idea. And I think he's a guy who understands the gravity of the situation, understands the moment. And so I like him. I like him a lot. Ray Davis. I didn't pay a lot of attention to Kentucky football this last season, but yeah, I saw some of his tape and I really like his tape.
All right. So then I'm going to our next one. I just got to mention in one of my previous mocks from previous episodes, Oregon's Bucky Irving is a dynamic running back who excels in various aspects of the game. He runs efficiently out of the shotgun, is a physical player in pass protection, and is adept at making plays in the flats and on screens. With his versatile skill set, Irvin would be an excellent addition to the Chiefs offense, comparable in the same style and speed to Alvin Kamara, but playing style almost close to Jerick McKinnon. So he's got like the size of Jerick McKinnon, but the playing style and the ability of Alvin Kamara, because they both run like 4.5 40s. If the Chiefs were to acquire Irving, they would have a player capable of lining out wide and running routes, executing screen plays effectively, running the ball successfully between the tackles, and make defenders miss in open space. This versatility would make the Chiefs' offense even more dangerous, and opposing defenses will have a tough time stopping them. Investing in Irving would undoubtedly be a wise decision for the Chiefs.
This is one of those late rounders again, 4-7. And I'm off 4-7, right?
Right.
Yeah, so
early third round grade too.
If you give him at a third, I'm a little bit less likely to want to do that, but it's purely the position. Purely the position for me. But I know what he can do. I've seen what he can do based on seeing what your analysis was in the past, and then being able to go look up his film. I like Bucky Brooks a lot. I would definitely Did I call him Bucky Brooks? Bucky Irving. Bucky Brooks, the NFL analyst, the NFL
also a former Chief too.
Yeah. That's probably why my mind went straight Bucky Brooks, but right. Bucky Irving. I like Bucky Irving a lot. I think he could bring some dynamicism to the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Let's go on to our next one.
And last but not least, he's to me like he could be like the Pacheco of this one here. And I like this kid ever since I watched him at the Shrine Bowl when he won Offensive MVP. And that's none other than Frank Gore's son, Frank Gore Jr. from Southern Miss. The Chiefs need a runner who is elusive, who can pick up tough yards as a backup and catch passes out of the backfield in order to keep Isaiah Pacheco at his best. Frank Gore Jr. is perfect for that role, in my opinion. He is an exceptional back who runs hard, breaks tackles, has great balance, and is very hard to take down and can do everything you want from a running back despite his small frame. Gore would be an ideal fit in an outside zone screen because his burst, acceleration, athletic ability, and play speed in the open field allow him to pose as a threat to go the distance whenever he touches the ball. This big playability makes him one of the most exciting players to watch, as you saw at the Shrine Bowl. The Chiefs could benefit from having a versatile backup like Gore, which helps Pacheco in short yardage situations. Gore is an exceptional back with big playability and could be a cost-controlled option for the duration of his rookie contract. Like, you get him in the 5th through 7th round.
I am totally – this is my guy right here. I think I'm all in on Frank Gore Jr. I don't know why, man. It has nothing to do with his dad. Okay, please understand that.
Right.
And I know a lot of people are gonna say a lot of things because of his dad. I think this kid runs hard. He does remind me a lot of his dad with the running style.
Yeah.
But he does have an elusivity to him that I really like. He can be slippery sometimes, and to be such a physical back, to be that slippery is a really good aspect, and I do think it'll complement a guy. He doesn't run like Pacheco. Pacheco runs like he has, he's upset.
4-3-7.
Yeah, he's not Pacheco. He doesn't run like he has.
He'll be a better running back than what we were supposed to get from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He'll probably make Clyde jealous on the sideline, like, dang, that's what I should have been doing. But that's the thing. He has a similar skill set. But Clyde was selected in the first round. And you look at Gore. If Gore was in that draft class, maybe Gore would have been considered higher.
And I do think – I think Gore has some untapped potential. And he, like I said, he doesn't run like Pacheco where he's angry at the ground. He's right. able to he has soft feet, surprisingly soft feet. For such a guy that can run like he does. This is Frank Gore Jr. is the guy that I really, really like. And I would like the Chiefs to pick him up. So there are your five running back considerations from PMAC. So there you go. First, second, Dylan Johnson. Third, Ray Davis. Four, Bucky Irvin. Five, Frank Gore Jr.
Yes, sir. Look at them, Chiefs Kingdom, because don't be surprised if one of these five guys I mentioned becomes a Chief, one of them. Because you know the Chiefs are looking, especially they're going to look at Jonathan Brooks. So that's all I got to say about that part there. And yes, thank you, Diz. And
with that being said, we come to the end. We come, and now, like Frank Sinatra said, now the end is near.
Yes.
But before we end, of course, we had to have a mock draft. And this time, we're going to do a full mock draft.
Yes. Yes. As you guys know, in the past few episodes,
this is PMAC mock draft 8.0.
Yes. 8.0. And sorry about that, Diz, but you know, I'm just so excited about that. So, like I was going to say here, the past few episodes, we've been doing three round mock drafts. And last week, we did a four round. So, as the draft approaches and it happens next Thursday, we are now going to do from now on, starting today and also for next episode before the big day, we're going to do seven rounds. So in this segment, using a seven-round mock draft for the Chiefs based on off of their recent moves. In the next episode, we will present a final one in terms of like what the Chiefs are going to do. So that might be an all dedicated episode for all of that. So we never know. But just know this: the Chiefs have several options with pick number 32 in the NFL draft. They can either select a wide receiver, a left tackle, a cornerback, or make a bold move that could shake up the league. The 2024 draft will feature one of the deepest and most dynamic wide receiver classes in recent memory, probably since the 2014 NFL draft class. So I have the Chiefs making a trade happening in my mock draft, but it doesn't include a wide receiver. Okay? It doesn't include a wide receiver because it goes all the way back to last year, and it was in relation to what we referenced in one of our just early segments. And it has to do with the tight end position because last year the Chiefs were looking at Dalton Kincaid and as a possible person who could be the heir apparent to Kelce once Kelce's career is over in Kansas City. But this person that I selected here was in their plans probably since last year from what I heard on the inside. Because you got to look at this. Kelce is currently the best tight end in the NFL, but he'll be 35 this upcoming year. Although finding his eventual replacement is not an urgent need, but it would be wise for the Chiefs to find a tight end through this draft, which would allow the rookie to take some reps from Kelce and give the veteran some rest during the season, keeping his legs fresh. So what I had realistically in reality, if we were to make this happen, the Chiefs give up their number 32 pick plus next year's second round pick, or if you want to use a third round pick that was used to acquire send L'Jarius Sneed to the Titans, and they gave us back for it. Should be enough to get the Chiefs to as high as between number 11 where the Minnesota Vikings are taking. But in this one, I have them trading with the Bears. And, you know, Pro Football Focus is my draft had me say I had to use the first round pick, which I don't realistically see in the Chiefs doing in reality. So anyway, with the 9th pick as the Chiefs trade up with the Chicago Bears, the Chiefs select Brock Bowers, tight end, out of the University of Georgia. They make a bold pick by selecting Bowers, who will be joining a stacked group of receivers threatening He will be joining a stacked group of receiving threats, including Kelce, Rashee Rice, who is pending suspension, and Hollywood Brown. Bowers' impressive skills were evident throughout his tape, especially his career at Georgia, and he's expected to be a very explosive player for the team. Although there were some scouts who thought the Chiefs should go after Olu Fashanu, the left tackle from Penn State. He might have been a better pick, but the Chiefs might have been concerned about, is he ready to start right away at left tackle? But also, one question has been raised is, how is Bowers willing to make an impact on the field with so many other talented players around him, right? However, his presence alone will be a challenge for opposing defenses, and he has the ability to make plays in the middle of the field at every level. He's tough to guard. He doesn't have to be wide open. If he's anywhere close to the ball, he's going to catch it. He's also a polished route runner, and he's already ready to make an instant impact for the Chiefs if he's selected. His presence as a receiving tight end will open up the field for the rest of the Chiefs pass catchers, making him another difficult matchup for defensive coordinators to prepare for. So if he's selected, Bowers is expected to be a solid role player in a tight end by committee role behind Kelce alongside Noah Gray and Irv Smith Jr., who in 2019 was one of the top three tight ends at his position coming out. And looking ahead, Bowers has the potential to be an incredible player and could eventually take over for Kelce, who has a few good years left in the tank. And with Bowers and Kelce on the field together, they could establish themselves as one of the most dominant tight end duos in the NFL since, yes, I'm going to say it, Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. And the team would have a great opportunity during the first 4 years of his rookie deal before the fifth-year option comes up to surround Bowers with a talented group of offensive-minded gurus to take his game to the next level and also learn from the future Hall of Famer himself, Kelce, before potentially securing like a record-breaking deal at his position. So, and there's other options if the Chiefs were not going to do that with Bowers. You know, let's say Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. drops, right? Or they want to say Romo Dunze. Or they can still go with the option of getting Olu Fashanu or, let's say, Joe Alt, the son of former Chief Offensive Lineman John Alt. So, what you think is on that? My Bowers pick.
I already told you I was going to give you some pushback on this.
All right.
First of all, this is tight end university. I'm just letting you know that. Chiefs is tight end university. We got two Hall of Fame tight ends within years of each other. Like Tony Gonzalez, 1997, and then Travis Kelce, 2013, draft years. The thing about the tight end position, I am a tight end guy. I think the tight end is a underrated position that a lot of people do not think about until they have to, right? Tight ends have been used early when I first started watching football. They've been used to block a lot. Like, why are we blocking? These are extra hands. These are two sets, a set of hands here that you could be using. A huge target for rookie receivers and even better target for guys that already know what they're doing. You could use them as a bailout, as a bug out type of situation. And if, for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, bug out is when you got to get out somewhere fast because of whatever reason. You got to get out of a pinch. He can be there as your out guy. But moving up to 9 seems asinine to me. Moving up to 9 to pick a tight end seems asinine to me.
Like, I know. It's from somebody on the inside that has told me about what he's heard from the inside, and I was like, you know, it's just
not. I'm not hating. It just seems so unlikely. It's just based on what I know from Andy Reid. and he could make that left turn. You know, he can make that, hit that left turn with the fishtail to throw the league off. And this will help our offense outside of us going to get a wide receiver, which is still a deep class. This is still a deep class of wide receiver. We could go find a wide receiver in later rounds, probably so deep as to the third that can make an impact in this year's
round, dude. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. This has been one of the deeper wide receiver classes as of now that I've seen. So we probably could go down to the third and get a wide receiver that could make an impact. When I say impact, have about 700 yards this year. But here's what I do like about it. Here's what I love about it, actually. It tells me that they're not worried about what what's happening with Rasheed.
Exactly.
They're not making a decision based on what happened, the unfortunate situation that happened with him. Yeah. And it also makes me think that they're not rushing into anything to fill that production, because you bring in this guy, Brock Bowers, he's not going to be what Kelce is right now. And that's what people are going to think about.
Right.
But they're going to grow what they're going to give him. And then he's going to mature throughout the process.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't handcuff them. And I like the fact that it doesn't handcuff them, and they're going to do the best with what they got. And if moving up to if Andy Reid did this thing, I'm going to be like, wow, but I'm not going to hate it. Just so you know, I don't know how you.
Yeah.
How do you hate Brock Bowers? Look at this dude.
I know, man. Look.
The dude is huge. He's a Mac.
Look at that.
He's so fast. Mm.
Imagine him and Kelce on the field at the same time, two tight end sets, and we're throwing teams off. And so we trick them with either we're going to run or we're going to throw. And that's what the Chiefs had to do last year. They had to count on more of the run game to help out. And I feel like, don't be surprised if the Chiefs go with that more direction, knowing that's to balance the entire offense out. So you don't have to worry about all the wide receiver issue. That could also deal with the wide receiver issue with the drops and everything. And I feel like going into year two working with Connor Embry, I think it's important to, you know, work with that group to try to work on those things while you try to imply everything else to your scheme to try to make it work. And see, like you saw this play here.
I saw that play
right here, man.
This play is what drew me, like, when I first saw it.
Kelce's been on plays like that before. Noah Gray, Blake Bell. Now you got Irv Smith Jr., who was also a player coming out of SEC at the tight end position. So adding Bowers to that group, man, everybody in the NFL would be like, oh, my gosh, not only are they going to run a dominant 12 personnel, but they could run a dominant 13 personnel.
I love 13. Tell you. I call it the jumbo package. I love the jumbo package. And so having Brock Bowers might be to the league what they expected Clyde Edwards-Helaire to be in 2020 to the league. It would strengthen a strength. So in light of that, so we got Brock Bowers, pick number one, move up from 32 to 9, with a trade with the Bears. Yeah. And we also trade our first round pick in 2025.
Which I don't really see us doing at all. We're not going to do all that.
Tight end, Georgia, for pick number 9. I don't – look, man, you gave the Bills 2 first-round picks. You gave them the first round and that next year. So this is realistic to me. Yeah, that's realistic to me. To move up to the single digits, yeah, that's realistic. That's just one more pick up. And it's the Bears. We have a relationship with their front office. So, and not only that, but that gives them two. They get Caleb Williams with this pick.
Mm-hmm.
They get rid of the 9 pick, and they get another first. They get 2 first round picks in 2025. Come on now, that's a doable situation. So, in the interest of time, we're gonna move on.
All right, so. This time, with pick number 64, the Chiefs finally get their wide receiver. And one of them was, as I mentioned, one of the top 30 visitors. The Chiefs urgently needed wide receivers after, you know, the recent events that have occurred with, you know, our current players, especially Rashee Rice and also cutting MVS. While Washington's Jalen McMillan may not start immediately for the Chiefs in 2024, he is expected to play a significant role, rotating with Rashee Rice and Kadarius Toney. Jalen McMillan. Yeah. So Jalen McMillan, wide receiver from the University of Washington, he might not start immediately, but he could be expected to play a significant role, rotating with Rice when he comes back and Kadarius Toney in the slot, while Rice and Brown and Justin Watson receive most of their snaps at outside receiver. McMillan is somewhat undersized at 6'1", 198 pounds, but he's expected to play the X slot receiver role. He's a real good route runner with strong hands at the catch point. With Rice facing legal repercussions, McMillan will have to fill MVS's role as the team's 50-50 receiver, ball receiver, and his physical style of play and aggressive demeanor with the ball in his hands are reminiscent of Rashee Rice's playing style. He'll have to fill that role until Rice returns. A receiver's ability to take the precise route can make or break a play. Knowing where to go to keep the drive going is crucial, and McMillan takes advantage of those moments. He would be a great addition to the Chiefs offense with his knack for winning on all three levels of the game. He is well equipped to handle the role of the team's second wide receiver. It could be an interesting fit for the Chiefs in the slot.
I like the slot idea. I love the slot idea, bro. Yeah. It's something that I really, really want to see happen. If we get McMillan, that would be like, you can move him so many different places, and the versatility of a wide receiver is just as much of a advantage for an Andy Reid as it is the skill set. You know what I mean? So I would love to see him in the slot, and just him being able to run all three levels, short, intermediate, and long. You could take advantage of that.
Yeah, that's some Cooper Kupp stuff right there.
Yeah. You could take advantage of that. You could send him short all game and then take the top off of a defense later on in a game. Like, you could play checkers and chess with so many different things if you have him in your office, especially if he's able to learn Andy Reid's system real quick. And I've heard nothing but good things as far as how his mental is, the way he processes the game and how he what he learns. He's it sounds like he's a quick learner. So I like Jalen McMillan.
Yeah, definitely.
And I love the value that we got him at. Like, everybody's thinking we're going to go wide receiver number one. This is one of the values that I enjoy. Not only that, but you got two more weapons for your MVP.
Exactly. And I feel like the fact that he's that guy, he's like, I'm not like a real big star, but I could come in and become that big star, probably a better player in the pros than I was in college. And I feel like the Chiefs see that, because he was a contributor to them going to Washington, going to the national championship. So that's why I like this move. And I feel like there's other options. If the Chiefs don't want to go a wide receiver, because, you know, this is a deep class, don't be surprised if the move for running back was in this move in the second round either. I mean, last well-known second-round running back was Jonathan Taylor, and he dominated. So let's say Brooks or even Blake Corum is in that move right there too. So just in case. So we can move on to our next
pick. You know me. But our next one.
Yeah. So with pick 95, I'm making this selection again just like from the last episode, and that's none other than Jarian Jones, the slot cornerback from Florida State University. I think he's one of the most talented cornerbacks coming out of this draft class, particularly as a slot corner. Jones is a gifted athlete who can guard receivers both outside and in the slot, and has an impressive 4.38 40 time. What is one of the keys to success in the NFL? winning the turnover battle is definitely one of them. And in my opinion, Jones is that player who could try to create turnovers. He's a fantastic player, a real playmaker. If they're playing with the lead, I want corners with ball skills who can make the plays on the ball. And I think Jones, along with McDuffie, would be both great at that. So Jones does struggle with tight hips and inconsistent footwork. So he may need some time this offseason to work on those aspects before playing extensively. However, he has excellent coverage ability, which makes him a strong candidate for early playing time. While there are other options for the nickel position, Jones has a good chance to rotate in and out as a role player on this roster, specifically as a nickel corner and on special teams. And there's other considerations before you answer on this part. There's his teammate, Renardo Green, who is considered the top press man coverage corner in his draft class, who is Jones's teammate. They were like arguably the best corner duo in college football last year. Green excels at man coverage. He's earned about a 90 grade in those situations. According to Pro Football Focus, Green prefers press coverage and is skilled at closing down throwing windows, just like Jones shows you on those plays. He recorded 11 forced incompletions and 2 picks in man coverage last season. Green is just at 6 feet tall, 31-inch arms, but I think Jones has longer arms than Green. But Green possesses good height and length for the cornerback position. He's physical and a tough player with great skills worthy of this selection if you don't want to go with Jones. Because I heard Jones is a later-round guy, like even to the sixth round. But whether it's Green or Jones, you got to get one of them. But I like Jones here, especially you could push McDuffie on the outside.
I'm with pushing McDuffie on the outside. Like this move means that you're, because I don't know if I'm putting, the guys that we got currently there. Because I'd rather the other kid. I'm losing his name. Not Joshua Williams.
Jalen Watson.
Not Watson. I don't want those guys in the outside. I don't want those guys in. You know I'm talking Jamari Connor.
Jamari Connor in the slot. Oh yeah.
Yeah. He can do it. Yeah. But I'd rather put him where he's strong, and that's more of the safety role.
Yeah.
The safety corner hybrid, and I'd rather him there, and having a guy like Jarian Jones would be able to free him up to be in his best role. With that being said, let's move on.
All right. And now with pick 131, finally the Chiefs get one of the most important positions that they needed to address. And I have the Chiefs selecting Mizzou tackle Javon Foster at 131. Despite the complaints of some fans of us not getting this position within the first three picks, however, Foster could be that guy. He started as the Missouri Tigers left tackle in 2021 and played 39 consecutive games until his senior year last season. He was named first team All-SEC in 2023 as a left tackle, along as being second team All-SEC in 2022. He stands tall at 6'5", weighs 319 pounds, possesses the potential to be a starting left tackle for the Chiefs. He excels in their zone running scheme and provides good pass protection with very good footwork and well-timed punches. He is especially effective at outside zone blocking with reach techniques. However, he may struggle on gap plays and lose balance on drive plays, but his development will lie in the hands of offensive line coach Andy Heck, who has previously developed former Chiefs offensive tackle Orlando Brown into a Pro Bowl tackle, now getting paid with the Bengals, and an undrafted player by the name of Andrew Wiley into a player who signed a big deal with the Washington Commanders last year, along with Nick Algoretti. So I fully expect Foster to be a player for the Chiefs, whether it has been the blocking or the pass blocking or run blocking, or just the general way that he just carries himself. Foster has a chance to impress really early. I think he will, if he is drafted to the Chiefs, I think he'll begin camp as number two left tackle behind Wanye, number three right tackle behind Juwan Taylor and Lucas Niang. But I think he could push Wanye Morris for the starter role in camp, adding valuable competition to the Chiefs' depth.
Here's my thing with him. I don't hate the pick. Now, I do think there are some things he needs to work on. Like you said, the inconsistent footwork and overplaying a little bit, I see that in him. And you're going to get some outrage from fans picking him, picking Javon Foster in the later round that you pick Wanya Morrison.
Yeah.
But you, I promise you, you're going to get some outrage. Okay, let me backtrack that. You're going to get a little outrage, considering you bolstered your offensive line. You got a tight end and you got a wide receiver. I think they'll be pacified a little bit if you went this route. Javon Foster is a good. He's got. I feel like his ceiling is higher than Wanya Morris's.
Yeah.
With the floor not being as low as Wanya Morris, and that's not hating on Wanya Morris in any way, because Wanya did his thing.
He did
the best he could last season, and I think he did really well. He was really good at run blocking. Really good at run blocking, but we need to work on that pass. And Andy Reid is going to give him that chance. Even if he did draft a Javon Foster, he's still going to give him a chance. That's one of the things I love about Andy Reid. He's going to give them a chance to be in the competition every single year. Yeah, no one just comes in, and not many people on this team just come in and have a spot. Not many. So he's going to get to earn his position, and I think he probably would take it. But I'm surprised they're able to find this decent of a talent in the fourth round. Yeah. So, and like I said, with all this offensive production up here, I think picking him, if he's still available in the fourth, I would absolutely like that pick.
Yeah. There are some people that have him as a third round selection as well, too. Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl, the director of the Senior Bowl. Yeah. He says you should get him in the third round if you want to. And I'm like, oh, okay. So,
I have heard third round. I've heard third round. And if he falls to the fourth, that's a steal for you.
That is a steal.
Because I do think do I think he'll be the best left tackle in the league? I don't know about that unless he puts in the work. But I think he would be a solid starter for you for years to come.
Yeah, I agree.
With that being said, let's move on.
All right. And now with pick number 159, I have the Chiefs selecting Tyler Davis, defensive tackle out of Clemson. And he's actually one of my favorites going into day three, because you look at his skill set. He ran like a 5.02 40-yard dash, almost close to like the 4.9s, and he put up 29 reps on the bench press. I believe the Chiefs make a very good pick by adding an explosive three-technique player who can penetrate on passing plays and strengthen the team's defense. Although this helps form a good rotation, it would also mean that Derek Nnadi, Mike Pinnell, and Tershawn Wharton may no longer be needed in a year, which they are on a one-year contract each this upcoming year. This new player is a talented one-gap penetrator who could cause havoc in the backfield with his burst. While he will be used in sub-packages to rush the passer, he needs to develop more strength and ability to play with lower center of gravity. But if Davis were to be placed between Chris Jones and George Karlaftis, he'll be somebody that you'll have to account for and know where he's at pre-snap at all times. He could be a game wrecker because of the similar size like that of Aaron Donald. He is athletic. He's quick. He has, just like Tavondre Sweat, a violent pair of hands. He could cause trouble from the 3-4 or 5 technique. He can demand double teams, which could also help out Chris Jones. Or if Chris Jones takes on those double teams, watch out for him, allowing linebackers to make more plays as well as, say, Nick Bolton, Tranquil, and Chanel around him. His biggest impact, however, will be stopping the run and making plays in the backfield. And the Chiefs value interior pass rushers, and landing Davis in the fifth round, to me, is a great grab right here.
I like Davis. I did. You put me on to him. Tyler Davis, he was not on my board. However, picking him in this last round and then giving him 3 years alongside with Chris Jones, not only could he wreak havoc in the middle, I honestly think he could move along the defensive line. The dude has some speed for a big guy.
speed, and he is stronger than Derek Nnadi. He's faster. He probably would dominate the ones, and he's better than Derek Nnadi and Ward. I'm like, this is the
that
guy.
That dude is a bull. That dude is a bull. He can. That dude is strong and he's fast. And so what I see is if he can like the first year, of course, you're just gonna let him ease into that defensive tackle, Derek Nnadi type of role, right? Limited downs, whatever. But as you get more in the years with him, you hope that he can expand his role. And with his speed, I can see them trying to push him to the outside. I can see him around
and confuse teams. Hey, man, if they were
as long as
imagine putting DeAndre Sweat at defensive end, and he actually has the speed too, and this and the ability, especially those rips he does. I'm like,
if they bring in DeAndre Sweat and this dude, like, look at the speed on the guy.
I know, man, that's some Aaron Donald ish right there.
I mean, just and with that kind of speed and being able to win one on ones like that, I think. You add different elements every year. You get the hand fighting, if that's his thing. But he's as strong as an ox, man. So I think using his strength and being able to push him to the outside eventually, maybe year three, four, man, that would add to his repertoire so much. So, we got two more. Because I know in the interest of time, we need to move on.
All right. So, with number 173, the Kansas City Chiefs select Dylan Lobby, running back from New Hampshire, or you could say the FC, the Football Championship Subdivisions, UNH, New Hampshire. So, Jerick McKinnon is still a free agent, leaving Pacheco and Clyde as the team's two remaining contributors in the backfield. You could consider Lewis Reese Zamet, but I think he's both running back and wide receiver, and he's also going to be return specialist. So to add another weapon to the team, especially for depth at the running back position, but also somebody who could challenge and challenge CEH, Veach can draft Lobby, who is a Swiss Army knife because he can line up all over the field in multiple roles and formations. While he primarily does his damage in the backfield, he's kind of like an FCS's Christian McCaffrey. That's my comparison to him. He could be a threat from the slot, and as a return specialist, he can return kicks and punts. His versatility will make him a valuable asset in Andy Reid's scheme. He's 5'10", weighs 208 pounds. He has excellent balance that helps him create additional yards after contact. Isaiah Pacheco is expected to take most of the carries, but Lobby will also compete with CEH to replace the production left by Jerick McKinnon.
You're also looking at a guy that I agree with everything you said, but he, like you said, well-balanced. I like the well-balanced thing. And it gives you a stark contrast between what Pacheco gives you and what he can give you, which means that defenses are going to have to play you differently when Lobby's in there. And switching it up like that could really throw a wrench in a defensive game plan if you're able to do it strategically. And that's one of the things I really like about Lobby. Also, he has decent hands. He has decent hands to go out for a catch or even field punts if you want him to. He has that skill set. And so I like the guy. And especially picking him up on
the end zone, and oh my gosh, like the way he hits those holes too, and just
he's not scared to hit a hole at all. So, I like Lobby a lot, especially getting him in the round that you're talking about. Yes, sir. That's where I'm talking about getting a running back. So, last but not least.
All right, last but not least, and with the final pick of the Chiefs seventh round mock draft at number 221, I got the Chiefs making a selection for Dominique Hampton, safety out of Washington. And he was a teammate of Trent McDuffie's before McDuffie got drafted to the Chiefs in 2022. Yep. watch. Hampton, to me, is a great pick here in the seventh round, especially if the Chiefs don't go for a linebacker. And I'll talk about that after I finish up on this part here. This guy is a high-energy player and a clear leader on that Huskies defense that helped them get to the national championship. He's kind of like that enforcer safety, like that Cam Chancellor, Kyle Hamilton-like safety. And the last safety drafted by the Chiefs in the seventh round that became a well-known starter was Jarrett Paige in 2006, who played all 16 games his rookie year, you know, who had 38 tackles, 3 picks, 9 special team tackles. Then the next year he would start all his games and, you know, have, you know, same amount of interceptions that he had his rookie year. And, of course, we all know about the story about Jarrett Paige, how he suffered a shoulder injury before he became a restricted free agent after 2029 and requested a trade and all that. But anyway, you got David Merritt, the defensive back coach of the Chiefs, and, you know, defensive coordinator Spags having a great history with working with defensive backs, and they should be very pleased to see a player like Hampton available in the seventh round. Hampton fulfills every requirement for the safety position and will be an excellent addition to Spags' man coverage packages, blitz packages, game plan adjustments against unique slot receivers, and more. In addition, he provides Spags with 3 safety options, including Reed, and in case Cook's health improves, especially now you got Shamari Conner, who's also what you utilize in the slot as well. Hampton could be utilized as a secondary slot defender, a dime backer early in his career. He could dominate early on special teams, and best case scenario, he could develop into a hard hitting safety, which makes him a reliable replacement for Justin Reed if the Chiefs decide to move on from him in the future. But as of now, you would have Reed, Cook, that could be your expected starters for the Chiefs, with Deion Bush, Shamari Conner, and Hampton playing supporting roles. And let's say other options, if they were not going to go with safety, then let's say linebacker, you know, like the J.D. Bertrand, as you saw, his name was on Quentin's mock draft. He's a name that I'm looked into. Curtis Jacobs from Penn State. There's also Edifon Olifosho from Washington, another teammate of Hampton and also who played with McDuffie at Washington. The reason why I bring a linebacker as another option in the seventh round or maybe between rounds 5 through 7, bringing in a young linebacker like Leo Chenal from 2022 would promote youth and to help fill the void if the Chiefs decide not to re-sign Nick Bolton next offseason, which you got to take into consideration. And some of the linebackers in this year's draft have the versatility to play off the ball on early downs and then put their hands in the dirt and rush the passer on the edge in passing down situations. And some of our safeties do that too, but if the Chiefs were to go that route, let's say with a safety, Hampton would be, but let's say those linebackers I just named as other options would be that. And also you got to consider if the Chiefs don't go with a safety, they could be comfortable with their current safety room. And then there's other veteran options like Justin Simmons, Eddie Jackson, and also Micah High, who could be 1-year prove it deal guys. But other than that, that's my pick for 221, Dominique Hampton. I like the way he plays.
I like this idea more than I like re-signing Justin Reed. Like, and the reason I say that, Reed is a good dude. Reed is a great player. Yeah. Super smart. I think we got the best out of him that we're going to get. I think we reached the top of his game. And granted, the top of his game is very high, but I think we've reached that area where, like, if you're thinking you're going to extract more from him, and you're going to do it at a higher price point, possibly. With us having to pay Chris Jones $30 million, you know, and trying to also get, if you want to get Nick Bolton under contract, if you want to get Creed Humphrey under contract, if you want to be able to have the potential to keep a guy like Trey Smith, because those 3 guys alone, I highly doubt all 3 of them are coming back.
Yeah.
So with that being said, with the 3 not coming back, Justin Reed's extension is probably going to be a little bit too much on the cap. It's going to be that's going to be an exorbitant cap amount. So having a guy in the chamber that is not a Shamari Conner, because I'd rather him in a different role, keeping him in the slot area, being able to get a guy to for Justin Reed to kind of bring along. This is it. This is it right here. I love he's got that hard hitting mentality. You're not spending a crazy, crazy draft pick on him. So if he doesn't hit, that's fine. If he doesn't do well, you can still bring him along and be a Joshua Williams in the dime nickel or especially special teams, especially with the new rules coming up. So I actually this is my favorite pick of the all, to be honest with you. I really like this pick because I'm to be fair, I like to evaluate the safety and the tight end position. So that's one of my favorite picks of this draft. So,
all right.
With that being said, man, that ends today's episode. We went a little bit long, but that ends today's episode of the War Room with PMAC. And with that being said, if there's nothing, if you have any closing remarks for us, and then we end it.
All right. Well, here are my closing remarks. Something personal here, though, for me, well, not for me, but just I wanted to give a shout out to our guy, JP, part of Chiefs Focus. Had a family member who recently passed away. Our heart and our thoughts and prayers are with him. And also last week, which was crazy, a football legend passed away. And of course, there's a lot of controversy around him and his ornithologist, James Simpson, OJ Simpson. My heart goes out to his children, Sydney and Justin Simpson, Jason and Arnell, and also to his relatives and also to the families whose lives were affected back in 1994, the Browns, the family of Nicole Brown Simpson and also Ronald Lyle Goldman. Everybody is still hurting at this time, and there's not a time to talk about who did it or not or whatever. This is a time of mourning, and families need time to heal, especially during a time like this. And for those who are going through situations that are similar to what those folks went through in the past, I would suggest talking to a friend, asking for help. Do not be afraid to seek the help that you need. Like call 988 especially if it's affecting your mental health, or call your local therapist, or call 911 for help. I feel like it's time for everybody to just not be afraid of any of these things anymore. And I feel like I needed to say that because it's important no matter what's going on. But yeah, our hearts go out to those folks who are affected, especially what's going on in today's world. And also to also close with this again, I appreciate you guys for sticking with us for the full round mock draft in today's episode. We'll be back for the draft next week and likely. Hopefully in the future, we'll have some guests, something like that in the future. You could be anywhere in the world, but you were here with us today. And I want to say thank you guys. Hit that subscribe button if you know. And me and Thiz will see you next time. And that's all I got to say, Thiz.
With that being said, nothing left to say but deuces.